your favorite cartoon characters will help you understand how drugs and alcohol can ruin your life. So watch the program. Talk about it with your family.
Make the right
One, two, three. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Special Presentation with Mike and Ethan, or...
Alf will not be seen tonight.
Now, it may not exactly match up with what your podcast player says, but believe it or not, this is our 200th episode.
Wow, 200 episodes.
Damn. Each one is about an hour and change, so that's 200 hours. How many hours are there in a week? Could you spend a whole week listening to our show?
Damn. You know, people, you should all appreciate how much effort we've put, how much free entertainment we've given you.
Yes. It's a good thing you like us so much, or we'd have to try harder.
Yeah, well, we're out here slaving over a hot stove, walking uphill both ways to give you quality, primo entertainment. Where else on the internet can you go to hear two guys talk about a cartoon and then read you the Wikipedia page about that cartoon because they don't know, they did no research? Only here. I'm sure there's other podcasts on the internet. I don't know anything about them. Frankly, I don't want to know anything about them. It's a market I could do without. But here, this is the podcast that everyone is listening to. Yes. This is the one, even when we're doing episodes that aren't this podcast, like last week's episode, which I hear is a hot new thing that people are going to be talking about pretty soon.
Oh my God. It's the hottest thing since The Color of Her Panties.
Right. Like it's going to be piping hot.
Yeah.
Full of piping hot takes. Oh man. I'm very excited about that because Piers Anthony has been an endless well of amusement, which I've dipped into quite a few times on one of my alternate things I do, Midnight Pals. And yet I've actually never read any Piers Anthony.
Yeah.
So I am very excited for a chance to actually see what it's all about.
Yeah, maybe that other thing should drop a link for everyone.
Hmm? Yeah, that's a good idea. We'll put it in the show description. Go to Midnight Pals.
No, I meant Midnight Pals should link to our new thing.
Oh, our new thing. Oh, you're right. It should do that as well. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna link to myself and all about how great I am. is there a dedicated website for the new thing?
No, there isn't. I'm gonna have it up next week, actually. So.
Oh, nice, nice. All right. Well, I'm gonna tell all my. I do have a lot of peers. I do have a lot of Piers Anthony fans in the Midnight fan base because whenever he gets mentioned, boy, do people get their panties in a twist, their colorful panties in a twist.
Yeah, Piers Anthony is one of those characters where you're like, you know, if you liked him as a kid, you have feelings now about him.
I feel like everyone, when they were a kid, if they want to be like, you know, one of those kids who's like, I'm going to read adult stuff. I'm a big boy now. It's either Piers Anthony or Terry Pratchett. Those are the two guys who write adult fantasy for kids, kind of, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know? the two guys who write adult fantasy specifically for kids who read above their grade level.
Exactly. And I think it's with both of them, you really do have to encounter them at a very specific time in your life or you will never get the full flavor.
Mm.
You know, I was a Terry Pratchett kid, and when I read him now, I still enjoy him, but it's definitely not the same.
It took me I never quite got into Terry Pratchett. He always struck me as very twee, but that doesn't mean that there isn't stuff to enjoy there. So
yeah, I think that is a fair assessment of Terry Pratchett, though. It is very twee, very British, and it's definitely a sort of humor that, like, if you're a kid reading above the grade level, you can feel as, oh, this is very smart. I'm very smart for reading it. And when you're an adult, you're like, oh, yeah, I get it. Come on, keep it moving, you know.
I was always more of a fan of Neil Gaiman, who was sort of the Ethan to his Mike. And
that is probably why, what is it? I want to say Good Omens Good Omens works as well as it does.
Because they're both working together on that one. Yeah.
And you can see that they are kind of restraining each other in ways necessary to have a product that's greater than some of its parts. Because both of them have a tendency to kind of fly off the handle in ways that are sometimes do a disservice to their material. But anyway,
like ranting about fantasy novels for 5 minutes on a podcast about comic strips.
Well, it's different when we do it because we're charming. unlike the famously uncharming Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett. Nobody likes those jokers. We were talking about comics. So what is today's comic that we are ostensibly talking about?
Well, for our 200th episode, I decided we should, go backwards way. Back. Way back. We are returning to the very first Garfield special.
This is the granddaddy of them all. The one that started it. And I have never seen this one before. I did not even know this existed, to be honest.
Yeah, this is an unusual one. It feels, it feels like a Peanuts special masquerading as a Garfield special in some ways.
It does. I definitely got that feeling when I was watching this. I think part of that is this is a kind of a Bill Melendez joint.
Yes, so Bill Melendez was working heavily on the first two Garfield strips or the first two Garfield specials, which was this one and Garfield on the Town.
Yeah, you can really see it. There's something in some of the movements of the characters that really looks very Peanuts-esque.
Yes. Garfield is much more animated in this one than he is in a lot of others. He's actually a lot more animated than most of the Peanuts characters are.
He does, there's a bit where he kicks Odie off a table, and just the way he moves, he's got this almost like rubber hose limb thing going on that looks very much like when Charlie Brown tries to kick Lucy's football. So, you can really see the Peanuts in this. It is also just, it is an odd special, like you said. It's not like based around any holiday, or anything at all, really. It's just it is basically kind of introduction to Garfield.
Yeah, and it's a lot like the various Peanut specials where they just sort of cram a bunch of strips together to make a story. A lot of these lines actually came from the strip.
Because I do remember a sequence of strips in early Garfield that involves Garfield going to the pound and meeting some characters very much like the ones that we meet in this. And
yes, although not the same characters.
No, slightly different, but similar vibes. So when I saw this, I was like, okay, I kind of recognize this from the strip. So what year did this come out though?
This one is from, 1980?
All right. So Garfield was, again, he'd only been out, for about a year at that point, I think.
2 years. Yeah, he came out in June of 1978. I mean, it's still so amazing that Garfield came along when Heathcliff was only 5 years old and just left Heathcliff completely in the dust. So
yeah. I feel like part of it is, that is interesting. That is very interesting. Because
this is from 1982, even later.
Wow. Garfield and Heathcliff are very similar in some ways, but also very, very different.
Yes.
And I feel like, I do think Garfield kind of captures what it is like to be a cat a little more.
Yeah, I think so. Heathcliff, well, I mean, Heathcliff has gone so far over the rails at this point that, you know, Heathcliff is just is what he is at this point. But
yeah. And that's the thing, like Heathcliff, if we look at, I don't want to say classic Heathcliff, but, you know, like old, how Heathcliff used to be.
Yeah. George Gately more, Heathcliff, as opposed to the one by his nephew.
Yeah. And it's not like Heathcliff is particularly, I don't know, like, it's not like he's particularly uncat-like. He does cat things, you know, but he's more of, he's not, like, because he's more of a Hellraiser, which is, and Garfield is more just, like, lazy, and that's more, you know, when I look at my cats, I'm like, no, they're much more like Garfield.
Yes.
Because, that is the thing about Garfield. Like, most of the stuff Garfield does is not particularly cat-like. And most of the jokes and things don't really have anything to do with being a cat, but just Garfield's personality and vibe are extremely cat-like because he likes to sleep, he likes to eat, he's kind of a curmudgeon, you know, he likes John and Odie, but he won't show it, you know, he's kind of aloof. And these are all just very cat-like traits, you know?
There are certain cat things he rejects outright, like catching mice.
Yes. That's interesting because, that is one thing that, like, I feel like if there were mice around, even my cats who are extremely Garfield-esque would probably still just chase them. Mm-hmm. But, the most cat-like thing I think Garfield does is just harass John early in the morning to put his food out.
That is definitely something your cat will do. Yeah.
Yes.
That's why I sleep with the door closed.
we should do that because my cats are getting really annoying about that. It is very interesting because we have two cats in the house now. Mm-hmm. We recently acquired a second one. And so there's Riker, who is kind of an older black cat. And there's Sandy, the new one, who's a young, frolicking, big tub of lard tabby cat. So extremely Garfield-esque. But Riker is the one who early in the morning will always come in and just start hitting me in the face until I come out and feed her. And Sandy, interestingly, knows that that is going to happen. But he's never proactive about it. He just sits at the foot of the bed and watches until Riker forces me to get up. And as soon as I stand up, he goes running out to the food dish because he knows the food is coming. So I just find the way they work together fascinating. This has nothing to do with Garfield. I just, you know, when you have a cat, you just take any opportunity to talk about the cat.
Yeah, you love your cats. You want to talk about your cats. And Garfield, you know, it's not that Garfield doesn't do cat-like things. It's just that when it's a bit of a, you know, unusual event when he does. And sometimes it's been long enough since he did something cat-like that you're like, oh, wait, that's right. That's a cat thing. Because it seems so out of character for Garfield.
That's true.
One specifically, the strip I'm thinking of is one where John is leaning against the mantle and he sees Garfield jump off the floor, ricochet off the wall around a flower vase, land on the hearth, and go between a bunch of like vases. And he has this expression like of unbridled joy as he seems to levitate through them stiff-legged. And John, who has just been leaning against the hearth, looks at the camera and says, I think I'll step into the next room and have a nervous breakdown.
Man, that is an extremely cat thing to do.
Yes.
I know Garfield has occasionally had staring contests. I know he's sometimes knocked things off the mantle. So he does occasional cat things. But
he broke a Ming vase.
He fights with Odie, which is you know, pretty cat-like. But in general, I think, you know, he's Jim Davis definitely captured something about cats with Garfield, and I think that's probably why he has resonated so much and definitely much more prominent in the public imagination than Heathcliff, who I think Heathcliff just is like, oh, that's a kid's comic, that's for kids because he does wacky stuff, whereas Garfield is like someone who I as an adult can relate to because I also hate Mondays and love lasagna. I was making a joke the other day though to my wife that like I should make some lasagna and see if Sandy will eat it because he eats everything. He was he was eating goldfish crackers the other day. So, which I guess are shaped like fish, so maybe that's why he likes them. I don't know. Anyway, she doesn't want me to feed him lasagna, though, because she is...
Then he'll want it all the time. Shoot.
I think it's because she's just mean. And I was like, I'm like, no, Sandy, don't worry. Daddy will give you lasagna. Daddy is nice. Not like mean mommy. She's not going to give you any lasagna. Anyway, Garfield. So this is the very first Garfield special, which is kind of it kind of was strange thinking that, like, this is our introduction to Garfield. Like, people watching this could conceivably not be aware of who Garfield was before seeing this special.
Yeah, they might have gone months being like, oh, Garfield, like from that special. I wonder if there's going to be a show, not having known that there was a comic strip.
Yeah, which is such an odd, because of course we live in, 30 years later. Garfield is 40 years later, actually.
Yeah.
Garfield, it is part of the background radiation of life in America. So it just the idea that there was a time when Garfield was brand new and you would have to be like, and they need to explain what Garfield was all about is pretty mind blowing.
And you never know where somebody's first encounter with Garfield was. I mean, some people might have been like, oh, that cat that people stick to the backs of their cars has a comic strip now?
Yeah, it's
I like to play this mental game where imagine that any given comic strip is the first time they run it in your newspaper. And there's a specific Garfield strip that comes from the story that this is kind of based on, where after Garfield has let go of a duck that he tried to catch and then flew away with him, we just open with the first panel as him falling in thin air and thinking, oh, poo. And then he gets caught in a net and he goes, oh, goody. And then he ends up in a dog catcher van and says, oh, poo.
Well, Garfield, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, and then what if your newspaper was like, hey, this cat is foul-mouthed, he keeps saying poo, and then they canceled it, and then that was the only Garfield strip you ever saw?
Man, that is pretty wild to think about. Garfield, I feel like, was one of the earlier strips that really did have continuing storylines.
Well, I mean, that wasn't it was a gag strip that had continuing storylines,
because
there were tons of continuing storylines in Peanuts, but it's hard to describe Peanuts as a gag strip.
Yeah, I feel like Peanuts definitely had continuing storylines. But I feel, and now I think a lot of comics will have gag comics will have, storylines that last maybe a week or two. And but I feel like in 1980 or so, when it's going to be what, like Hager the Horrible, Beetle Bailey,
BC, Croc, Tumbleweeds.
I do not recall any of those comics any time in my life having a single strip where, where it would last 2 days, like a single storyline.
The only one I can think of is Beetle Bailey. There was definitely a story about, around the tail end of the 90s, I think, or maybe in the aughts, where it was a Christmas storyline where Sarge, Beetle had a weekend pass to go home for Christmas. And because Sarge didn't have anything to do, he said, Sarge, come home with me. And Sarge spent Christmas at the Baileys. So,
oh, wow. Okay. That's interesting.
It was nice to show, to really demonstrate their, how close they can be, even if there's a lot of violence in their relationship.
Yeah. I guess since that's post Garfield, I suppose by that point, maybe they were like, oh, Beetle Bailey can be used for, more than just gags.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And in the 90s, there was a whole story about General Hatrack going to sensitivity training and having to apologize to Blips and Buxley for sexually harassing them.
That is true. And also, I just remember they also had not like large storylines, but definitely multi-day events when they introduced characters like Corporal Yo or Specialist Gizmo, Chip Gizmo.
Yep.
But
oh, and let's not forget the insanely long BC storyline that revealed that it was the future instead of the past.
Oh, man. So, okay, so I take it back, but a lot of these things, like I said, are happening post-Garfield. So I feel like Garfield was definitely something that kind of revealed that this was something that people could, that cartoonists could do in the newspaper. But
maybe, but then again, I mean, how many pre-Garfield BC and Beetle Bailey strips have you read?
I mean, I have
at this
read...
point, how many of them... At this point, how many of them were being collected?
It's been a long time, but I do remember as a kid actually reading collections of BC and Beetle Bailey. They were like, you know how comics used to be collected in the early Garfield books are like it? They're like...
Oh, you mean the regular... UK books? Yeah.
Yeah, they're like actually like book-shaped, so the comics are kind of like in this weird, instead of being... horizontal, they're like vertical, but very often the middle strip is slightly, the middle panel is slightly askew for visual interest.
I remember seeing some Peanuts books that were like that, and the way they did the Sunday strips was that they had a dotted line pointing to which panel was next. They were
oh, it's just like Not Me is hanging around. Man, so Garfield really did, I think, kind of change the landscape of the comics page in a few ways. I feel like definitely, you know, people talk about there being pre-Peanuts and post-Peanuts, and I really feel like Garfield is another one of those landmark things. Like, I can't really imagine the comics page without Garfield, and even though I'm not the biggest fan of the Garfield strip. I mean, I think it's good. It's a good strip.
Yeah.
I don't think it's.
It's not. Sure, you had tons of the collections as a kid.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it's one of those. Like I've said before, like I don't put it on the same pedestal as like the Far Side, but it's a quality strip for what it is. But I can't imagine if the comics page would be poorer without Garfield.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. But so this is here comes Garfield. He's here. He's coming.
Yep.
He's coming. This is, I guess you could assume, a lot of people seeing Garfield for the first time, hearing Garfield for the first time.
Yeah.
Really, which now I think about it, hearing Garfield for the first time is a strange thing. I remember when I was a kid and I heard him for the first time, it was Garfield's Halloween, you know, Garfield in disguise. And I just remember being like, oh, he's Peter Venkman.
So did you have another voice in mind for him?
I don't think I did. I mean, I might have, but that was, you know, like 30 years ago. So I don't remember if I had any thoughts about what Garfield would sound like.
If you were a kid then, your voice for Garfield was probably the voice that your mom did when she read them to you.
Yeah. Garfield, I mean, Lorenzo Music is a... just a very, it's the perfect voice for Garfield.
It really, you know, really is. Does, yeah.
Yeah. He really does kind of encapsulate what that character's all about.
And I think with Garfield, he has a lot more room to stretch than he did with Carlton, your doorman.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is, I feel like he did a lot of voices. I mean, he had a very distinctive voice. So whenever you hear him, you know, that's him.
Yeah, and you know him immediately, but usually he's kind of, what they want from him tends to be sleepiness. So you get care. They often kind of cast him as the kind of dim one, like Tummy Gummy would be an example. And Ping Pong the Gorilla.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking of. I feel like that is really such a waste of his talents, though, because they were like, oh, play a dumb guy. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, what, like every other voice actor in Hollywood was like busy? Because dumb guy voice is very easy. You just you literally just do like, hey, it's me, oh, I'm a dumb guy. That's the voice. You know, you don't need,
I like what a shouty dumb guy you are.
I'm just
a
saying,
loud dumb guy.
You don't need to get like, you know,
dumb star scream.
It's like, who's interrupting my coronation?
Coronation Starscream. Oh, whiny Galvatron.
I'm just saying that, like, learns of music, I guess it's, you know, that's the thing. It's like, I thought as a kid, oh, that guy's a major star. You know, he's a major star. Why is he doing all these other, like, you know, these two-bit roles as, like, Ping Pong the Gorilla? But, I mean, voice actors don't get paid that much, and he's a working guy, so obviously, you know, but...
You do what you get paid to do, right? And, you know, and of course, our idea of a major star is a little different. I remember thinking, wow, Billy Barty is a major star. He's in Masters of the Universe and UHF.
Oh, that's right. Damn. Yeah, that's true. It's true. It is funny when, like, you're younger, you just don't realize how these things work.
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing, like, you know, what's his name? Sean Bean in Lord of the Rings and being like, that guy's got it made. He can have any role he wants now. He doesn't have to do, like, just shit. And then I see him in, like, movies where he's getting killed by Dracula and stuff. And I'm like, what's the deal? I thought he was a big star. He's just a working guy.
Tara Reid, you know, being Invisible Girl from Fantastic Four didn't take her anywhere. Now she's being in the Sharknado number 6.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, that's why we support strikes.
Yeah, support the strike.
And, you know, pay actors what they're worth. Pay everyone.
Pay writers what they're worth.
Yeah.
Pay animators what they're worth.
Yeah. Pay us all. You know what?
Yes. Pay me what I'm worth, damn it.
Yeah. We're taking you down. You know what? Yeah.
Man, what if podcasters went on strike? Would anyone notice?
It's like, oh my God, every white guy in America would be like, would be out of work then.
It would actually probably be a better world.
Yeah. I'd be like, oh no, no true crime. Wow.
No true Scotsman.
But, Garfield, what were we talking about? That?
True Scotsman podcast. I like
true
that.
Spots, the true spots, Scotsman podcast.
Just true stories about living in Scotland. I wish I lived in Scotland so I could start that now.
I bet it would be, you know what? I bet they've got a lot of stories over there.
Oh my God. You know, they say the naked Scotland has 1,000 stories. This is one of them.
You know, if, you drink a really good scotch though, you know, if you drink a good scotch, you can hear a Scottish piper. But if you drink a really good scotch, you can hear 1,000 pipers.
Piping. I once just sucked a really good butterscotch and heard a piper.
Oh, really? that's a damn good butterscotch.
It was a butterscotch compact disc.
Sound. Damn.
Xanth, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, bring it a full circle.
Yeah.
What a cat-ass trophy.
Yeah, speaking of cat asses.
Yes. Yes. Garfield. He's in this. Yes. I was pleased to see that this started with the Garfield dance that we saw from that other Garfield special.
The one that they described as, what's her name? The one who's, Desiree Goyette, doing her impression of a fat person dancing. So, couldn't get a real fat person, huh?
I mean...
What, were they on strike?
It is funny because I remember seeing that. It's like, when I watched her do it, it's like, a fat person would dance like that. It's kind of like how just anyone would dance, really.
Yeah.
You know? But... It is definitely a little. We don't see Garfield dancing a whole lot except for this one sequence. I mean, he's not really much of a dancer in general.
No.
But I think he was really taken with. What is this? I guess breakfast was coming, so he was really excited about it.
Yeah. So I guess it's like Snoopy's supper time dance.
Yeah, I guess this was such an early thing that possibly they hadn't completely nailed down the Garfield personality yet.
Mm-hmm. But they definitely knew what they wanted from Lou Rawls. Sing us a song about eating, Mr. Rawls.
Oh, yeah. Lou Rawls, I know he's also had an illustrious career, but I will always associate him with as the Garfield guy. He's always the Garfield guy to me. Just like Lorenzo Music will always be, you know, the Garfield guy to me.
Yes. When he's not Peter Venkman.
Yeah. Okay. Peter Venkman. When we're talking about the waste of Lorenzo Music's talents, I really do feel like Garfield and Peter Venkman really show how much what that voice is capable of.
Yeah.
You know, because it's sleepy, but there's an edge to it, mm-hmm. you know, and you really get that with these characters. Anyway, and that's but then they then fucking Bill Murray had to ruin it all. Thanks very much.
Now, he wanted the job as Garfield. You know,
he wanted the job the long himself. Game. That's right. 30 years he waited for that moment so he could be the new Garfield. Anyway, there is also another weird thing about this special, though. And I think it's the weirdest thing of all. And it really upset me when I heard it.
Upset you?
Oh. Yes, it upset me. I think you may be able to guess. It is John Arbuckle. His voice.
Yes, it is. Not our absolutely beloved Tom Hoogie. It is Sandy Kenyon, who, as far as I can tell, you know, I don't know if there's anything I've ever seen him in besides this, but he had a long career. And, you know, what have I seen him in? I was like, oh, he played an Alzheimer's guy in the Onion movie.
The Onion had a movie?
Yeah, there was an Onion movie in 2008, and, you know, it was so bad that the Onion didn't even promote it.
Wow. It's just like the Mad Magazine movie.
Yeah, exactly. The Onion movie, you know, which has, you know, it ends with a guy in a rubber onion mask.
Just like Calvin in his vegetable yeah. nutrition play.
What, me worry?
Oh, man. No shade on what's this person's name? Sandy
Kenyon. Yeah. At first, I thought it was Dallas McKinnon, the voice of Gumby, but nah, different guy.
I mean, no, he's not bad. It's a fine voice, but it's not Tom Hoogie. And yes. really, you know, like because sometimes it kind of sounds like Tom Hoogie, you know, but there's certain points where he says something and it's just like, wait, that's not my man. What's going on?
No.
Here? What are you trying to pull here?
Where is our man Thom? Come on.
Yeah. So I'm trying to figure out when did Thom take over as the voice?
After this one, but the thing is, he was the first voice of John. Because as you might recall, when we watched The Fabulous Funnies,
yes.
that was the first animated appearance of Garfield. And Tom Hoogie was there, but Lorenzo Music was not.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So we're getting... Yeah, they're a really kind of
They had a couple of false starts here.
Yeah. Now, I wonder, because we've talked about how Jim Davis did not have Arlene appear in Garfield specials for a very long time. Because apparently he had a very specific voice in mind, and they could not find someone to fit it. So it
God,
makes
who
wonder,
could that voice be?
Well, Arlene does appear in those new kind of weird ones where the you know Pet Force and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
So presumably that's the voice that he's been searching for all these years, just like Mach in Rock and Roll, searching for one voice to bridge the dimensional gap.
Well, can you remember what she sounds like in that? Because I don't.
Not really. Girl voice, I guess. Honestly, you know what? Considering that Arlene has a very prominent gap tooth, like that is a big part of her character design, I would expect a voice that had, you know, kind of a charming little, you know, whistle or
a
lisp
little
in
bit
it.
Of a hiss. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, again, which would kind of,
oh.
I don't know.
They should have gotten Shelley Duvall. She would have been great.
Damn. You know, always someone willing to play to her strengths. I think yes. Shelley Duvall would have been really good. But my point in all this is I wonder then if Jim Davis also had very specific voices in mind when he was thinking of Garfield and John as well. And that might be like he kind of was at that point, like, you know, in the very beginning, it's like we're doing a Garfield special. You kind of have to have Garfield and John in it. You can't like be like, no, we don't have the right voice, so we're gonna wait 30 years before we find it. You gotta just go with the army you have. So
that's what they did with Snoopy. They had Snoopy not talk for 30 years, and then inexplicably they have him being voiced by Leonardo.
Leonardo DiCaprio?
No, Leonardo the Ninja Turtle.
Oh. Oh.
It was Cam Clark.
Oh. Oh. All right.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a Snoopy voice to me, but I'm not sure what voice I would give to Snoopy.
I legitimately cannot imagine Snoopy with a voice.
I feel like I'd have to go for someone, you know, with a lot of chops, like, I don't know, Sammy Davis Jr.? Shoot.
Interesting choice.
Someone who can sing and somebody who can deliver comedy. And, you know, Cam Clark could do both of those, but could he Snoopy both of those? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't see it. I can't see it. I guess they could have gone 30 years with unvoiced Garfield. Could they? I think it works. They can get away with it in Peanuts because it is an ensemble cast. So you have, like, you know, a lot of other stuff happening. But
it would be really weird to have John just talking to himself and, you know, Garf and reacting as if he could hear what Garfield was saying.
Yeah, that's a good point. Does Heathcliff talk in the comic? I can't remember.
Never. No. Heathcliff is silent in the comic, but he speaks in the cartoon. And Snoopy speaks in the comic, but is silent in the cartoon. And Garfield talks in the comic and talks in the cartoon.
And I feel like, did we do like a Venn diagram of this at one point?
And Marmaduke doesn't talk in the comics and doesn't talk in the cartoon, but he did talk in the movie.
Oh, okay. He talks in all the movies because he was also talking in the, the live action movie.
Well, what other movie was there?
Well, they just came out with one, didn't they?
Oh, that's right. Oh, does he talk in that one? We didn't even look at that one. Oh,
yeah. He's voiced by that guy. That guy, you know, from
the guy from The Thing. Yeah.
Yeah, he's in the movies. He's in all the movies. You know the man. He's in the dinosaur movies.
The dinosaur.
What the hell's
movies?
His name? Yeah, oh, the new Jurassic movies. What's his name? The guy. He's got
is
a name.
He Mario?
Yeah, he's Mario. He's
okay. Yeah,
God,
yeah.
What's his name? You know the guy. Our listeners know the guy. You guys know the guy. He's got a beard. What the hell's the guy's name?
Yeah, he's got a beard, but
Chris.
Oh, it's not even him. It's Pete Davidson.
Oh, I was thinking of someone else.
Yeah,
I was thinking of
thinking of Chris Pratt, aka Chris Pratt.
Wait, so he's not the voice of Mario?
No, Chris Pratt is the voice of Mario.
Oh, he is. Okay,
yes.
All right.
Pete Davidson is the voice of Marmaduke.
Oh, okay. Now I understand. Marmaduke had a voice? Wait, what? What? When did Marmaduke talk?
Marmaduke talked in the 2022 Netflix film, which we haven't looked at yet, and in the 2004 live-action film where he was voiced by, what's his name? Hansel.
Yeah, Owen Wilson, wasn't it?
Owen Wilson, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so this other Marmaduke voice guy, he's in the Netflix one. Is that
right? Yes. And all right. Oh, he's the voice of Mirage from Transformers Rise of the Beasts. Awesome. Okay, now I want to see that, because that was great. Mirage was awesome.
Wow. All right. Well, now we've got that all settled away.
Okay, yes. Where were we with Garfield?
Well, the important thing I think that we all were agreeing on is that Sandy Koufax here is no Tom Hoogie.
No, he is a big disappointment if you're familiar with the regular voice. And
it's interesting because we've talked before how John's voice is not... There's nothing that stands out as particularly compelling or special about it, but it just works so well for John, and it really does... You really notice that when they have someone else do the voice, that it's like, okay, look, you're basically doing a voice of a guy. That's what John is. He's just a guy who he needs to be. He's a guy who owns a cat. That's his thing.
They hadn't yet hit on the idea that John was kind of a nerdy shut-in who stayed in and drew cartoons. They knew he was a cartoonist, but for the most part, he was just kind of a swinging 70s guy.
Yeah, and, man.
And then when the 70s ended, they had to kind of develop a new personality for him.
Man, the 70s were quite the time because John Arbuckle is a single income household cartoonist, makes enough money that he can have his own entire house. Try doing that nowadays.
I would like to. Yes. Please. Anyone listening? Anyone like my cartoons that you've never seen because you know me as a podcaster?
Well, we'll link to our cartoons in the show description as well. So everybody, you can check out. No one listening knows that we both were once cartoonists back in the before time.
Before we found out that podcasting was a lot faster and easier to do. So we just did that instead.
This is where the big bucks are. Getting like, it's like make no money, but easier.
Yes. That's honestly, that kind of is the real reason.
Oh yeah. It's way better. I mean, it's like, cause I feel like also with cartooning, like people have to like read a cartoon and people don't really want to read, but like,
nobody likes to read. That's why it was hard to get guests from my other podcast.
Reading's for nerds. That's just.
But there's no shortage of nerds.
Yeah, well, not me. I'm a cool dude. So I see a nerd, and I'm gonna put their head in the toilet. So don't be coming around here with no fancy pants books. Yeah.
But when you have a nerd and a cool dude together, they never know which one they are.
Oh, that's true. If you that's the problem. It's like if you got two dudes to get. Together and you can't figure out which one's the nerd, got bad news. It's you.
Yeah, especially if you're not one of the two dudes.
Yeah, that's true.
they're just walking away laughing at you, nerd. Yeah.
Anyway, welcome to two dudes podcasting and fries. But we were speaking of Garfield, and we were saying this is Garfield. Here comes Garfield. Is basically it's a bunch of Garfield strips that are now a special, and it's a plot that you've seen before in a lot of pet related media, which is going to the pound.
You may cartoon fans may remember that this is also the plot of the Ren and Stimpy pilot, Big House Blues.
Yep, I feel like every pet-based show does this eventually. Heathcliff, Marmaduke, Snoopy's been to the pound, Lady and the Tramp. It's just a thing that happens to pets. And, it's generally the same thing, which is it is like a prison. It's a prison for animals. Yeah. It's animal prison.
And it's always like a high-kill shelter. They never get picked up by, the cat house on the Kings or somewhere really nice.
No. It's always a shelter that's like just positively salivating to kill animals. Just like you're there for a day and they're like, we're gonna throw you in the wood chipper, Garfield. It's also pounds in cartoons are extremely aggressive. In their policing of the town. In this one,
I believe it was you who described it as being like in cartoons, cats eat mice, dogs eat cats, dog catchers eat dogs.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. It's just a natural food chain. because in this one, Garfield and Odie get taken to the pound, and it's interesting because what happens is they are harassing the neighbors. You remember from the comic.
Hubert and Reba. They are regular characters, although they rarely interact with the pets. Usually they're just talking about how weird John is.
Yeah, you know? I thought this was interesting because I don't think they're in any other animated Garfield thing.
Yeah, I think this is the only place they appear. My personal favorite Hubert and Reba strip is the one where John is... trying to lean out the door to grab the paper while he's still wearing his towel from taking a shower. And then Garfield slams the door and knocks him naked into the street. And and Hubert and Reba are like, look at that filth. Have you seen that, Reba? And Reba's like, I'm looking.
That's a good one. I like the one where Garfield is sitting in John's food and then he refuses to eat it. So Garfield forces him to eat it. And yes. Reba's like, the cat's feeding John again. And Hubert's all like, pack your bag and we're leaving.
Well, why don't you want to eat the eggs that my cat anus has been pressed flush against?
I mean, that's the thing is when you live with cats, that is a cat thing. You just have to accept every surface in your house will have cat anus pressed flushly against it.
It's especially funny because, you know, Garfield is absolutely incensed. And, you know, of course, John can't understand him. So he doesn't realize, like, Garfield is bellowing, just because I sat in your stupid scrambled eggs, it's not like they're diseased, you know?
that is a very Garfield thing though. Now I feel like they actually
Garfield's a pretty good comic strip.
it's pretty funny. Yeah, I mean, I was saying it wasn't the best, but it's definitely one of the higher tiers of comic. There's a reason it's lasted.
We judge it as as a high mid tier, not because Garfield itself isn't good, but because we are just big fans of the comics in general, and we sort of recognize how much more we could have. But by the standards of what we get, Garfield is very high tier.
Yes, even though we did rank all the comics at one point.
We did, yeah.
Yeah, and I would say like
Garfield was in the top 10.
Oh yeah, I mean I wouldn't put it like I mean obviously I would never put it above. Farside or Calvin Hobbes, but
or even Bloom County,
but it is definitely a marshmallow comic, you know. If we're going by that rating system, you know, there's no doubt about that. I thought it was interesting that we got to see Hubert and Reba here. I feel like they thought maybe they would be much bigger characters in the Garfield universe than they ended up being, because we do see them occasionally in the comic strip, but they're not like, you know, they're not like there that much. And I feel like this special, they thought maybe like Hubert would end up being like the Mr. Wilson to Garfield.
Yeah, you know? he comes across as very much like who's the mean old man from Courage?
Oh, Eustace.
Yeah, he's like Eustace.
Yes, yes. He also actually has a dog in this, which I don't think we've ever seen that dog again.
No, but we did see this dog before in the strip. There was a whole week of Garfield complaining about how, you know, I hate going through tall grass. I pick up bugs and stickers and little dogs with sharp teeth. And this ends with one of my alt. So he gets harassed by this little dog all week that keeps trying to gnaw off his tail. And one of my all-time favorite Garfield strips is the one at the very end where the dog is sitting panting happily and Garfield sneaks up on it with a pail and douses it with water and says, just as I suspected, it's just eyeballs and a bow. and the dog is literally just this hank of hair with a couple of bulging eyes looking like the ghost after Pac-Man eats it.
It's just hair and sneakers.
Yeah.
I don't remember that one, but so that dog does. We do see this dog again, or at least a doggleganger, I guess.
A doggleganger, very good. Yes.
But is it ever established this is Hubert's dog in the strip?
No, it was not established there. It was just a random neighborhood dog. So, and I'm wondering if that strip came before or after this special, because there have been strips that were influenced by the specials.
I don't know. But Hubert and Reba, like we do see, they are tertiary characters in the Garfield universe. I'd say they're probably about up there with Herman the Postman as how often we see them. Though he appeared in the Garfield and Friends series.
I found it. The strip is from 1985. So it's we saw the dog again, but years later.
Oh wow. All right, I guess Jim Davis was like reaching back into the the bottom of the barrel. We're like, ah, here we go, bring back this moldy oldie.
Kind of like how there are a bunch of scenes in Dr. Seuss's "Oh, the Places You'll Go" that he's actually borrowed from Halloween is Grinch Night.
Oh, that's fun. Well, you know, as you know, when you're a cartoonist, it's like sometimes something works, you bring it back. I just thought of something completely unrelated. Do we ever see Irma in any animated Garfield thing?
You know, I don't think we do. I can't think of any time that we've seen Irma, or at least not immediately off the top of my head.
I feel like Irma was a fairly important secondary character for quite a few years in Garfield, though.
Yeah, she was there during the initial John comic strip.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen her in a while, but, you know, that's just the way it is in Garfield.
That doesn't mean she goes away, but
she went away. John just hasn't gone to the diner in a while, you know?
Yeah. Hey, he's trying to eat healthier. And,
yeah, well, you know, he's got a girlfriend now, so, Liz is probably making him.
Yeah, she first appeared on, she last appeared on September 19th, 2022, so yeah.
Oh, wow. That's actually more recent than I thought, but, well, I guess he just hasn't thought of a good gag of setting a diner in a while, but it happens. Hmm.
Yeah, it says that. The Garfield wiki says that some trivia about Irma is that she has never met Odie, and she's one of the few regular characters that has rarely appeared outside the comic strip. But one exception was in the video game Garfield Caught in the Act, where she made cameo appearances in the password section and a whack-a-mole game.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I guess maybe her comedic potential has not been fully realized in the animated realm, but
yeah.
I
realized that. Wow, I have no idea what her voice sounds like. So,
I kind of feel like she would have a voice kind of like Grammy Gummy.
Grammy Gummy, like
kind of like a the June Foray witch voice.
Yeah, the June Foray voice. I can see that. I can see a June Foray voice. Actually, you know who would have been great for her, and it's too bad that we'll never get to have her do it. Is what's her name? The voice of Mrs. Krabappel.
Oh yeah. No, that
Marsha Wallace.
Good choice.
She would have been really good.
Yeah. No, that's a good one. Actually, Miss Hoover's voice might not be too bad either.
Yeah. You rarely get to hear Miss Hoover deliver any actual jokes. She's a little dry, so I'd like to hear her do more of that kind of thing.
Yeah. I guess Jim Davis is waiting 40 years before he can find the perfect voice for Irma. So you're welcome, Jim Davis. Now get on it. We want an animated Irma special.
Yeah. Something where Garfield has to wash dishes because he ate at the diner and couldn't pay. There you go.
He's on his way to get his bike from the basement of the Alamo, but it turns out he left his wallet at the fortune teller's. So Garfield and Odie are harassing Hubert's dog, and he calls the pound, and the pound sends the dog catcher to come and arrest Garfield and Odie. Now, the thing about this is, of course, I guess Garfield and Odie do not have any sort of licenses on them.
No.
When you look at them. But even so, Hubert knows that they belong to John. So it is kind of fucked up that he just calls the pound and is like, take him and kill him, you know?
Yeah. Hey, Arbuckle, I had your dog executed. You're welcome.
I think it is, they take him to the pound, you know, dog jail. And we get a lot of jokes about, the usual stuff that happens in dog jail. Like
dogs playing the harmonica, that kind of thing.
Yep. They have the cat come up and ask for cigarettes, which I'm surprised they got away with that joke in a kid's thing.
Yeah.
In 1982 apparently was a little more spicy than what you get away with today in kids' fare. Mm-hmm. They don't have anyone doing the thing where they are drawing, like, you know, the little hash marks on the wall to. But, you know, they do a lot of the usual prison jokes. It is funny because Odie is I guess, got arrested, what, a week before Garfield or a day? I'm not really sure what the time is.
Odie gets arrested. Garfield is like, oh, well, I don't like him anyway, and spends the rest of the day at home. And this is where we get another one of those really weird catchphrases that Jim Davis was trying to push that never caught on. Or maybe it's not a catchphrase so much as just a running gag where you have somebody saying, you know, pleasure motors.
Oh, is that like a recurring thing that he does?
Yeah, you see it a couple of times in the Garfield strip. Let me see. Let me see if I can find some examples of it.
So pleasure motors.
Yes, you know, specifically, you know, pleasure motors.
I guess I do not know pleasure motors.
Yeah, and
I know that pleasure is their business, and their business is pleasure, but.
But here is a strip. Yeah. Here's the strip where Garfield is turning on turning up the TV, and it says, "Welcome to the Rocky Oxnard Show," and he has to pull it down and goes, "I always turn the volume down the wrong way." But if you zoom in on the speech balloon here, you can tell the guy is saying, "You know, pleasure motors."
Huh. I guess Jim Davis just thought that was really funny.
Yeah, I don't know. And there's another strip where somebody says, "You know, pleasure motors." So.
Huh.
Where did this come from? You know, specifically, not just pleasure motors, you know, comma, pleasure motors.
Is it like based on some actual like television commercial he might have seen?
Yeah, that might be it. It might be an in-joke for like people who live in Muncie.
Maybe. Well, you know, when we do the the big pilgrimage to
to visit Paws Incorporated. Yeah. Nobody ever goes in and nobody ever comes out.
I'm trying to find if, you know, Pleasure Motors brings up anything in Google, but all I'm getting are references to this, you know, this special we're watching. Except
here it is.
For this one fan fiction called "Look Out, Here Comes Garfield."
Sounds like one of those fan fictions where they just rewrote the existing thing to, like, maybe include a new character or something.
Let's see. Garfield. This is "Look Out, Here Comes Garfield." Garfield, the lasagna-loving cat, sits out on his first adventure when Odie gets captured, taken to City Pound. It's up to the fat and lazy feline to rescue his friend. Along the way, he encounters a familiar face from his past. It does sound like they just... Okay, what is the familiar face? Okay, it does look like this person just rewrote the actual script for this special, but I want to see who is this. Okay, he seems that he meets a girl cat. Is that the?
Oh, he's combining. They're combining this one with Garfield on the Town, the one where he meets his mom.
You're right. Okay, so. It's a crossover between Garfield and Garfield.
Oh, wow. It's about time they met. Oh, I wonder who'd win in a fight.
This is so weird. It's like, so someone wrote a fan fiction that's literally just taking two different Garfield specials and interlacing them. So, all right. It's got one review. Okay, let me check out. I wonder what the review is. Oh, Mr. Crab says, okay, this is epic.
Wow, well, Mr. Krabs.
Fanfiction.net. Good on you. Is there a lot of Garfield fanfiction actually in Garfield on fanfiction.net?
I don't know. I wonder if there's more on AO3.
Well, let's see. There's we've got things like Garfield Quickies Season 2 by the same person. Who just wrote this kind of combined thing. There's The Origins of Garfield and Friends, also by the same person. There's Brian and Matt Meet Garfield the Cat. And the summary being Brian and Matt are hanging out with an orange cat named Garfield. And then Garfield and John meet Brian and Matt. Brian and Matt go to the Garbuckle household to meet Garfield and John. There's John's weird date. When John gets a strange date out of nowhere, strange things start to happen. It's up to Garfield and Friends to save the day. Garfield writes a fanfic. Fed up with my unoriginal stories, Garfield decides to write a new story himself to prove that he's a more creative writer.
That's interesting. So I guess this writer must have gotten some complaints that they were just recycling existing Garfield material.
Apparently. There's Odie versus Garfield.
Garfield? Yes. Oh, sounds edgy.
Hi, I'm Garfield. I'm terrified that horrible Garfield had come for revenge through Odie. then other ones include Garfield's Nightmare Before Christmas. Garfield helps John get a life.
I imagine that's really just Garfield gets a life.
It's by the same person, so I think it probably is. There's What If the Panther Killed Someone Else? What?
The Panther from Garfield in the Rough, perhaps?
Oh, I think you might be right. This is the stories of how the lives of Garfield and her friends would have turned out had the quietest feline not taken Lyman's life, rather the life of another non-canon.
Oh, he killed Lyman. Oh, well.
Oh, okay. Then let's see. There's Whatever Happened to Lyman. There's Monday Again. Garfield Eats a Meteor. Show Me How to Love a Garfield and Friends. Clowning Around, Garfield in the Human Turning Animal World, Garfield Goes on Vacation in Paradise, John's Limerick, John's Second Limerick, Two Garfields, One Odie, Primal Self, let's see, these are all fairly recent, within the last 2 years.
Whoa, dang. I thought this was going to be something that somebody had been pumping these out in 2010, and now they're going to be like, oh, geez, don't look at my old stuff, you know, now that I'm a multi-million-dollar novelist. But
let's see. How about Garfood is Needed?
Garfood? Yes. Garfood?
Garfood.
Is it like... Does it just mean food for Garfield, and now Garfield always calls it that?
The only description is that Garfield is too busy to go outside. How about, we've also got Normal Disturbs Garfield, John's Cupcake for His Late Birthday, and If Garfield and John Had McDonald's for Dinner.
Are these fart stories?
It's anime dog fart stories.
Oh,
wait, how about John shaved his eyebrows? There are, let's see, how many pages
are there?
There are, oh my gosh, at least let's see, last page, there are 14 pages of fanfic about Garfield, and almost all of them are just rewrites of existing Garfield specials, which is actually kind of surprising, because I feel like almost
everyone. Why would you do that?
Yeah, that seems weird. I feel like almost everyone who has become a cartoonist goes through a phase when they're a kid where they basically just write Garfield fanfic, but none of those people seem to have posted it to fanfic.net. It's only this one person rewriting Garfield specials.
Yeah, when I was a kid, what we did was we took existing Garfield strips and redrew them with our own characters.
Oh, yeah, I did that.
Yeah, with the critter.
Yeah, the critter. Wow, what a terrible idea that was. I never saw the movie with critters, but it was very big at the time.
Wouldn't it be funny if there actually was a guy named Lawn in it and you didn't know?
Oh, my God. I thought I was so clever. Well, you have to understand that Lawn, the character Lawn, was Chinese. That was how I differentiated him from John. So when I drew him, you know, when I was in third grade.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So check this out. Okay. This is how I drew the John analog in my terrible Garfield rip-off comic I did when I was in third grade. It's the Critters. Uh-huh. Oh, the Critter. It's from the movie Critters, who comes from space to Earth and becomes a pet owned by not John, but Lan, who is Chinese, and I depicted this Chinese man by drawing a guy with a beret and a one of those like circus strongman mustaches where it just like, you know, like it does that thing where it kind of curls like in circles at the end. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know, like an extremely exaggerated version of like a Kaiser mustache, almost
a handlebar mustache. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And cause I was like, yeah, that's what Chinese people do. They have those handlebar mustaches and berets. So
you kind of had the idea of like maybe a Fu Manchu, but like going the wrong way.
Yeah, I was just looking back. It's like, wow, my racism was entirely just kind of bonkers. Cause it's like, I'm not quite being racist, but only because I didn't know enough to be racist, you know, because I'm pretty sure that what I was trying to imagine is probably some sort of like, you know, what do you call those hats that you wear when you're in a rice paddy? I don't know.
We call it a conical straw hat. Yeah.
That, like, I was probably trying to imagine one of those, but because I was very sheltered, I was like, oh, it's a beret. That's what those are. You wear a beret when you're in a rice paddy, I guess. And I think like, yeah, Fu Manchu. And I was like, oh yeah, that's right. The curly mustaches. Anyway, I guess maybe I'll give myself points that at least I was trying to do representation by having an Asian character in my terrible Garfield ripoff story. In fact, has there ever been an Asian character in an actual Garfield? I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know. No.
In fact, maybe diversity win for third grade me.
When was the last time you saw a black person in Garfield? Shoot.
You know what? You're calling out Jim Davis for his horrible racism. Not a single POC in Garfield. Seriously. Wow. Big yikes. Anyway, what were we speaking? We were talking about Garfield.
You're speaking of Garfield. And yeah, this all kind of came out of, you know, Pleasure Motors.
Pleasure Motors. There is another one of Jim Davis's famous Jim Davis-isms. Davis witticisms in this?
Yes. A Davisism. Let's call it that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, like whoever came up with X needs to be dragged out in the street and shot. Or, yes. You know, of course, ha ha ha, wee.
Yes.
And
the bones.
And this is, yes, my bones knit. Yeah, and this is one of the rarer ones, is, you know, Pleasure Motors.
Yes.
And
but we also get in this one, we get Nice Touch. That
yeah, happens. That's one of the, this is the very first Nice Touch. And
it is funny because I get what that means and I get what's happening, because Garfield is, he's trying to break into the, you know, the pound, and he's at the door of the pound and like lightning flashes and Garfield's like, nice touch. I get what you're saying, Garfield, that like, it's thematically, appropriate that this lightning struck, and therefore it's a nice touch to the ambiance of the scene. I guess Garfield understands that he's being meta. He understands he's in a cartoon. But it's just, this is the only person who ever does this is Garfield. You never see anyone do this nice touch thing other than Garfield. And it just makes me think that like, if Garfield saw something that was like thematically inconsistent, he'd be like, hey, bad touch. but anyway, so Garfield,
then we have the overnight song, the song about midnight snacking, where Garfield goes down to the kitchen and finds that it is absolutely loaded with food. Like, who is this food for?
Yeah, that's right, because John is asleep. We see Garfield tiptoe past him, and he goes to the kitchen, and all this food is just laid out, like a freshly baked lasagna. It's just like, I don't know, elves made it or something?
This is another thing where they're reenacting a comic strip, where the one where Garfield pretends to be Beetle Bailey, and then gets to the potato salad and says, so this is what it feels like to be potato salad.
He does say that. He says the line. Yep. But it doesn't make much sense. But, you know, It's Garfield. I guess it doesn't have Garfield. To.
Yep. Forget about it, Jake. It's Garfield. And this is where he gets the idea to go break Odie out of the pound.
I did think it was interesting that that Garfield decides on his own to do that because he gets bored. Because I was kind of expecting that it would what would happen is at some point John would find out and then guilt Garfield into doing this.
Yeah, you know? John never noticed that Odie wasn't there.
Yeah, which indicates this probably happened very quickly, which, again, very high kill shelter that they want to kill Odie immediately. Yeah.
I mean, don't forget, they woke John up and he threw them out after breakfast. So he hasn't seen Odie all day.
Yeah, but I guess this was a different time when your pets could just wander around freely, unsupervised. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there was one story where Garfield literally kicked Odie into next week.
Wow, that's like a Nancy comic.
Yeah, it wasn't. And then the next Monday, he's like, what was I looking forward to today? And then Odie crashes into him and goes, that's right, I kicked Odie into this week last week.
Oh, do they actually, like, do both, though? And Odie...
Yeah, he kicks Odie into next week, and Odie is missing for the entire week. And then on Monday, he shows up again.
Wow, that is actually, like... That is actually really clever. I gotta give Garfield credit for pioneering, the meta commentary. I guess, you know... that he was Nancy before Nancy.
Yep. Well, actually, long after Nancy.
Oh, this is a more recent one? Never mind.
No, I mean, Nancy was doing that in the 50s and 60s.
Oh, was Nancy meta back in the old days, too? I thought Nancy...
Oh, yeah,
only...
totally. Oh,
I thought Nancy only got meta when the new woman took over.
Nancy didn't get meta. Nancy stopped being meta when the shitty guy was doing it forever.
Oh, he was too busy drawing Fritzy's tits.
Exactly.
Well, Nancy's
getting...
And
it sucks because that guy was really good when he was drawing the Muppet Show comic, but...
Well, there weren't enough... I guess there weren't enough tits in that to distract him.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm glad that he didn't do that long enough to just devolve into drawing Miss Piggy's tits all the time.
It would have basically become... What is that other...
It would have been like 12 or 14 of them.
Oh, man. I'm trying to think, like, what... It would have basically become, what the hell is that comic with all the tits? And there's the comic, you know, with the... You know, with the you know, the comic... You know, the comic...
Not the one with the legs. The one with the tits.
Yeah, not the legs. The one... You know, yeah, it's like the guy with the beard in the Mario movie. No, what is this one? Okay. It's a comic strip. It's a comic strip that... It's got some animals in it. Kind of like... It does this kind of... Erzot's Bloom County thing with animals who are kind of cartoony, but then there's like humans, and the humans are drawn really serious, especially the women who, like, the cartoonist was like, oh, I really love drawing titties so much. And then eventually he, like, I think went on to do, like, you know, comic book covers of like Spider-Man's tits or something. And he got, like, I think he got in trouble because he just loved drawing tits so much that finally, you know, but the world was changing, and he was still doing that thing where he's like, what if I drew big titties on Spider-Woman and did the Escher spine thing so you can also see her ass? Hey, don't you like that? And it turns out that the world was changing in a way that, like, people didn't that wasn't kosher anymore. And I think I remember he got real mad about it. Oh, my God. What is this guy's name? Does anyone? What is the name of this comic?
No, I have absolutely no idea. That's not okay. Over the Hedge, is it?
No, not Over the Hedge.
It's not Nine Chickweed Lane.
No, not Nine Chickweed Lane. One second. I'm trying to remember. I am trying to remember. It is... Okay, wait. It's back. I got it. Liberty Meadows.
Liberty Meadows. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And Liberty Meadows by Frank Cho. That's apparently the guy that I'm thinking of.
More like Frank Chud.
Zing! Anyway, but if you look up Frank Cho, you can see the guy likes drawing titties. That's his thing. He did. Oh, yeah. And I guess, yeah, I Sergeant Frank Cho. And here's an article on Comics Alliance, which is comics biggest. I believe that's the comics Chud site. Chud News and Comics. I think so, because the article title is Frank Cho the last champion of straight men's boners in this hellish feminist wasteland we live in? And I do not think that is an ironic title.
Wow. For real.
Yeah. Anyway, Frank Cho, he draws tits.
Our hero, ladies and gentlemen.
Our hero. You know what? I guess he found, you know, he found what he likes. More power to him. Yeah. Whatever. Draw, you know, you gotta live your truth. And this is a man who wanted the world to know that he loved drawing.
I want the world to know boobs.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I can't throw stones at that, even though I am. Yeah, Frank Cho. Anyway, Liberty Meadows never had a comic, a cartoon adaptation, because the comic's not very good, and it really only stayed in the in the paper because all the dads could look at the titties.
So, okay, where were we with the Garfield thing? Oh, that's right. Garfield goes to the pound to try and break Odie out, and immediately gets thrown into the pound, which is not a very well-run pound, because they don't have individual kennels. They just put them all behind one big wall of mixed cats and dogs.
Yeah, that seems like a bad idea to
Yeah.
me. Also, yeah, it's just, because it's dog jail, or dog and cat jail.
Yeah.
So they explain why the cats, dogs are there, and like some of them are there because of, you know, the reasons usually animals are there, and some of them have committed crimes, which is amusing. Because I think one of them,
they have specific crimes, and some of them, of course, were just you know, walking around on the street without a license.
Yeah, there's one who is impersonating a moose. So they have the one cat who wears a moose head.
I wonder if he was impersonating a specific moose.
Oh, that's true. Bullwinkle. That's the only moose I can think of.
But the important cats introduced here are Fast Eddie and Fluffy, his dog sidekick. And this is interesting because we've met characters like this before, but it's not the same characters.
If I recall correctly, in the comic strip, when Garfield meets these two, they're both cats. It's like there's a cat that looks like Fast Eddie. I don't remember his name. And Fluffy is just a giant fat cat that looks like Garfield with the dopey expression.
Yes, Guido and Fluffy.
That's
and it has the most confusing the most confusing strip in any Garfield, where Guido introduces himself as, my name's Guido, this is my associate Fluffy. And Garfield says, Guido and Fluffy, with a little smile, and Guido says, I've killed for less than that.
I mean, maybe Pleasure Motors, this is something in Jim Davis's psyche that we are just not privy to.
Yeah. Guido and Fluffy.
No.
Oh, I get it. Guido and Fluffy. Wink.
Yeah, I'm not. Oh, is that the implication that they're a couple?
Maybe? I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to, because Garfield has a weird little smile there, and I mean,
kind of problematic to look down on this, on same-sex couples, Garfield.
Like, yeah. I guess is it a prison sex joke? Like, oh, he's the bitch and you're the butch?
I mean, God, you know what? I now that you mention it, I don't really see any other way to interpret this.
Yeah.
As that would make sense as a joke, unless there is some famous, like, couple, Guido and Fluffy, but
Fleto and Guffy. I don't know. But I like Guido and Fluffy better than Fast Eddie and Fluffy.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they made this Fluffy a dog, so you wouldn't have the whole prison sex angle.
Because a cat would never have sex with a dog.
No, never. Even though we know all cats are female and all dogs are male, that's cartoon law.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right. So if they fucked, it's not gay. So there you go. It's all good. Technically, tis because, yeah, even though presumably they're both male characters, cats are coded female, dogs are coded male, so it's still a straight relationship. You know,
actually, I kind of like how Fast Eddie and Fluffy look like an alternate universe version of Ren and Stimpy.
Oh, yeah. Man, you know, I actually, the more that I think about this, the more I'm really digging the idea that in the cat world, in the world of pets, gender is, it's not gender that matters, it's species. So as long as as long as you're fucking between species, it's still heteronormative. But if you have a same species relationship, then people are like, whoa, two cats fucking? No way. No. That's, you know, we can't have that in front of the children. It's gonna be,
you
ideas.
Had kittens? What are you, gay?
Yeah. What? It's like having sex for reproduction? That's fucking gay. None of that.
Well, that's why we put them in a sack and drown them.
Yeah. See, that's why they did it. Because they're like, we gotta put these kids in a sack. It's an abomination. to have sexual reproduction. Fuck that. Whoa, gross. The only way to do it is to bud.
Well, you know, in some continuities, that's how Transformers reproduce.
What, for real? They bud?
Yeah, there's actually comics that show the extremely painful process of having one robot grow out of you.
I always assumed the Transformers just built new Transformers.
There's a lot of different versions, but that there was a whole story about how there was one specific group that had held on to this, and they'd reproduced so much that now they didn't have anything left of their soul.
It's like, okay. Geez.
Yeah, so okay, so there's actually blasphemous sex for robots? Great.
Jeez, what a there's some real deep lore in Transformers.
There sure fucking is.
God. Okay, well. So Garfield,
yes. Yeah. So after we introduce the cast of the pound, we are informed that the big house in Big House Blues, the pets here party till dawn and then they're marched off to the big sleep. So Garfield has one more day to live. Odie has zero. They're putting him to sleep at dawn. Why dawn? I guess so they have the whole day to bury him. Or yeah. Cremate him or whatever. So we have this weirdly long scene of Garfield, trying to figure out his emotions about his friend. And there's a whole song about so long, old friend. I wish I could see you once again. I never knew the time would come when I'd be losing you. And it's like, wow, this feels more like a Peanuts thing than a Garfield thing.
Jeez. Yeah, it really does. This is a lot heavier than, what we've come to expect from Garfield.
Yeah, they really hadn't quite gotten the Garfield flavor down just yet.
Yeah.
And in some, it is, as we have frequently say, Garfield is one man's very specific vision. And there are some things that he's just not as good at. One of them is drawing Garfield as a young, cute kitten.
Oh, yeah, they do that thing where they just draw him with eyelashes.
Yeah, as Jim Davis seems to think that eyelashes are what make you look young.
Yeah, because that's the Nurmal thing. And it's
has the eyelashes. Garfield and Odie in this have eyelashes, and Orson had eyelashes. So when he was a runty little pig. So yeah. Somehow Jim Davis didn't get the memo that eyelashes for cartoon characters are a secondary sex characteristic for females.
Yeah, he's just like, oh yeah, if I guess it's just eyelashes equal cute, so young now have eyelashes, but it's like, it's a little confusing, you know. Yeah. I remember as a kid being very like confused when I watched, when I read U.S. Acres, because I'm like, oh, it's Orson's a girl, right?
Because and Orson dressed up in drag a lot too.
Yeah, also Orson, they do like Sheldon and Booker do refer to Orson as mom.
Yeah. So
there is a lot gender play going on with Orson.
And Orson once drank the Mediterranean, so there's that too.
Yeah. But
Garfield and Odie, they're supposed to be a cute little kitten and puppy in this flashback, but they just look really, really excited for the most part because they just drew their eyeballs even bigger and otherwise don't look any different.
Yeah, they look like they just they just look like they're on speed or something. So.
They really do.
So yeah, that. It's funny because Jim Davis clearly, look, when we saw, what is it, Blue in U.S. Acres, it's clear you can draw cute cats, or at least someone at Paws Inc. can, but they just...
Maybe they didn't work there yet.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they wanted to keep Garfield recognizable as Garfield,
yeah.
So they just, you know, but whatever.
Or I guess they were like, if we make a baby Garfield, it's going to be too marketable, and then that's all anyone's going to want. You know, kind of like how there were like, you know, 10 or 12 Clifford the Big Red Dog books. And then they introduced Clifford the Small Red Puppy. And there were like 48 of them. And you're like, it's like, now he's just a dog, a regular dog. You lost the Cliffordness.
Right. it's just like, well, he's the whole point of Clifford is that he is gigantic. It's like you might as well do like Howard not so huge.
Yeah. And the whole story behind Clifford is that he was a puppy who was very sickly, and they weren't sure if he was going to live, so Emily Elizabeth made a wish for him to grow, and he did.
Oh, so, that's what happened?
Yeah. So now we've got, you know, twice as many books where he's small as ones where he's big. And now it kind of comes across as he was such a cute little puppy. And then he got really big. So eventually we had to have him put to sleep.
Oh, Clifford.
Clifford. So this cartoon ends again, just like the Ren and Stimpy cartoon, where you have a kid volunteer who wants to adopt Garfield, and Garfield takes this opportunity to make a break for it.
And I did like that. I thought that was, you know, kind of funny. Because you're expecting,
you have
like,
some nice collective action on the cats and dogs part.
That is a little different, because in the comic strip, I think that Fluffy acted as a battering ram and just smashed through the wall.
Yeah, he acted as a... Yeah, Guido says, we got to bust out of this pound. Got any ideas? Why don't we use Fluffy as a battering ram? Fluffy, be a battering ram!
Yeah!
And Fluffy, just holding on to Garfield, crashes through the wall. I guess he's supposed to be using Garfield as a shield, but it looks like he just stepped on Garfield on his way through the wall.
Oh, yeah, I thought they used him as a shield when I was...
Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't. No. I see that it might not. You know,
I really like the design for Guido because he has a Lyman mustache for a cat.
Well, yeah.
I like when characters have that, like Zoidberg, the fleshy mustache.
it's a good design thing. They should use it more often. All right, so they do manage to escape, I guess, from the pound.
Yeah, so you have a huge crowd of dogs and cats running wild and free, and we get a nice scene with Garfield and Odie returning home, and Odie and Garfield happily playing with Odie and tickling him and rubbing his belly and just being, you know, it is nice to see them enjoying being together. So it's, you know, before we started this podcast, I was complaining to Mike about how difficult it is because I'm actually spending a month taking care of my brother's dogs, and I'm not that much of a dog person, although I do like these specific dogs. So there's So it is frustrating because, I mean, I understand why Garfield gets sick of having Odie around all the time. But at the same time, it's, you know, I also understand being, you know, how just because you don't want someone around all the time doesn't mean you ever want anything bad to happen to them.
Yeah. Well, you know how it be.
Yep. You know, because, I mean, I have kind of the same... same relationship with these dogs as Garfield does with Odie, because, you know, I didn't adopt these dogs. Garfield didn't adopt Odie, but at the same time, there is a sort of, you know, it's sort of your responsibility because it's all part of the family.
You know, there is another thing about this Garfield special that I feel like, is very different from later Garfield specials as well as Garfield strips. And that is John in this, or Sandy Kenyon.
Yeah.
Sandy Kenyon. Thank you. John legitimately does not seem to understand Garfield in this. It's like they are trying to make Garfield like an actual cat who really can't, you know, can't talk, but like, you know, later things, John does seem to magically understand what Garfield is trying to communicate. Whereas in this one, he really does not several times. And that kind of the plot kind of hinges on John not knowing what Garfield or Odie are doing.
That's right, because we didn't mention this, but when Odie disappeared, John did ask, hey, where's Odie? And Garfield actually mimed out everything that happened and John didn't understand.
It's yeah.
Sort of like there's this other strip where John asks, where were you last night, Garfield? And Garfield does some strange miming where he's sort of waving his arms and bouncing around. And he says, you met a ballet dancer and you went to a sack race? And Garfield just says, close enough, as he reaches for his coffee. And they don't actually explain what he did.
Well, you know, I ask my cat what he's been doing all the time. And he doesn't mime anything.
Yes.
He just kind of... Mostly he tries to bite my foot, you know.
Well, feet are good to bite. Yeah.
They really are, apparently, because he sure does it a lot. He's really into it.
Yeah, a foot feels good to bite, and people make a noise when bitten, so it's a toy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I can't argue with that logic. Yeah. But anyway, so
Looking forward to meeting Sandy and finding out what's so great about biting your foot.
Oh yeah, I think you'll like Sandy. I think he's a good cat. Everybody loves Sandy. Yeah. But anyway, so Garfield and Odie have now returned to the house. Everything is back to normal.
Yeah,
I guess.
And there's no comeuppance for Hubert for trying to get Odie killed. But
that
we never see him again. So.
Maybe like kids were like, we hate that guy because he tried to kill Odie. And so they were like, well, test audiences did not like the dog killer guy. So we're not going to have him in future cartoons.
the guy who with the hate on for Garfield and Odie tested very poorly.
Yeah. I'm acting like they had actual test audiences for these things. For like, actually,
hey,
that's probably.
This is interesting. There is no credit for Odie in this movie.
Oh, do you think so? Is Odie played by the usual Odie voice actor, or do you think?
Yeah, Greg Berger is there, so he probably just did Odie's voice, but wasn't actually credited as such. But you know, years later, we were like, no, he puts way too much effort into being Odie to do this quietly.
So. Yeah. Okay, interesting. I guess maybe in the year 1982, they were like, it's just noises. He doesn't need to be credited. Before Frank Welker made a whole career out of just that. So.
Yeah.
But
you can now get a $1,500 toy of the character that Greg Berger plays on Transformers, Grimlock. And it has his voice. So I hope he's getting some of that 15 grand or 15... Or 1,500.
You would hope, but
yeah.
But probably not. What are you gonna
do? And that's why we strike.
Yeah. Anyway, so I guess Garfield, here comes Garfield. There went Garfield. What do we think about Garfield's very first animated adaptation?
Well, I can see why they wanted more, but compared to what came afterward, it has so many strange touches. You know, that's me looking back at the camera. Strange touch.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, it's what it is. I think if you're a kid and you saw this, it'd be like, I like it. It's got all the elements of Garfield that kids generally like, you know, Garfield picking on Odie, Garfield eating, Garfield, like, being sarcastic, you know, all that stuff. But yeah, it hasn't quite gelled properly yet.
Yeah. The strip was 4 years old at this point, so there was a lot of, you know, there is a whole lot of Garfield lore that hadn't yet been established.
Yeah.
But more than that, you know, the character himself was still evolving, because this is not the Garfield. It's not the Garfield that had started the strip, but it's also not the Garfield we would come to know. He's in a weird kind of halfway position where he's still, you know, very kind of lumpy and sack-like compared to the relatively slim Garfield of the future.
Yeah. But at least we are this is post Mumps Garfield. So
yes, he definitely still has the big cheeks. And I like how in the animation where you see him, you know how Garfield does the thing where he stretches out and you see his whole neck with his little button nose at the top. I liked how you could see how his cheeks kind of deform when he does that.
Oh, just like a real cat.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think this was a promising start to an illustrious career for our favorite fat cat Garfield.
I mean, you have a fat cat living with you. I have a fat cat living with me. I'm sure we have everyone has a favorite fat cat that isn't Garfield. But yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, our second favorite fat cat.
Yes.
the world's, America's favorite fat cat.
America's favorite fat cat.
Yes. The one that we can all agree on is not Heathcliff.
Yes.
Though Heathcliff, I think, as fat cats go, is probably, you know, second best.
Top tier, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
In the top 10. Top 10 cats. Because honestly, there's not a lot of good animated cats now that I think about it. They kind of mostly suck.
And you know, you look too far in and you start getting, you know, it's like, does this really count as a cat? Because you look for, you know, best animated cats and you get, like, you know, Simba? Not really a cat.
No, that's not a cat. No. I mean, yeah, it's like, no, come on. We know when we say cat, we mean domestic cat.
Yes.
You know? And generally it's like, okay, there's Garfield and Heathcliff and the others are all just like villains who, like, you know, are there to beat up mice.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I guess there's Peter No-Tail. I guess he's...
Oh, yeah. He's fine. Yeah.
He's fine. he went to America.
Yeah, he went to AmeriCat.
Yeah, yeah.
There's Stimpy, but he barely looks like a cat.
He looks like a... I always thought he was a hamster when I was a kid.
Meowth, but he's something totally different.
Oh, yeah, Meowth isn't a cat. Meowth is a Meowth.
Yes, Meowth is a Meowth. Cat is a cat.
You know, there's the Cat in the Hat, but, like, when I was a kid, I was like, that doesn't fucking look like a cat. What are you trying to pull
here? Yeah, that looks like some creep in Kigurumi pajamas.
Yeah, it's like, get that shit out of here. other cats, I guess there's Tom, there's Sylvester, they're fine.
Crazy.
I mean, yeah, crazy cat.
Scratchy?
You know, there are
Snowball
many...
Snowball 2?
Yeah, there are many cats in cartoons. They just, but so few of them really capture anything about the nature of the cat other than, yeah, Garfield. I feel like he's probably the most honest depiction of a cat that we have in animated form.
Actually, I think Snowball 2 is pretty accurate because she's so inobtrusive. She's just always there in the background.
That's true. I mean, I guess someday if they make a Get Fuzzy cartoon, maybe we'll have another kind of, you know, accurate cat depiction in media. But somehow we still haven't gotten one of those. Now that I think about it, that's kind of surprising.
Yeah, Get Fuzzy is basically a Garfield reboot.
Yeah, that's funny. I wonder if they've ever actually like attempted to get an animated thing made of that, because I really feel like it's kind of set up for that. But
yeah.
Anyway, I guess we'll see if it ever happens. Anyway, there goes Garfield.
There goes Garfield. We'll see you again, Garfield, probably in one of our next 200 shows.